Hi, and welcome to another edition of Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by theoutdoorinsiders.com. I'm your host, John Stallone, and this week we are talking with he's a podcast host. He's a lifelong hunter, so lifelong that I think he knew Abraham Lincoln in his early years. He's old and decrepit, but he can run around. There he is, right there. He can run around the hills with the best of them. He actually runs circles around guys less than half his age. So we got Bruce Hutchin on the phone with the Whitetail Rendezvous. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm just doing awesome. And we had we had a great warm up. And John goes, "Oh, say that for the show. Say that for the show." So I don't know where he wants to take us. But one thing I'll tell you, I hunted last fall. I hunted 22 days above 10,000 feet. And my guides were half my age. And I didn't kick their butt, but they're just amazed, you know, what I could do. Oh, we climbed a 14er just looking for sheep. And the granola people, you know, the natural people, the people just climb 14ers, they're looking at me and going, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm looking for sheep." It didn't compute. It just didn't compute. And I just laughed my ass off.
I remember when you were telling me that story on the phone. Yeah. So, Bruce's, you shot mountain goats, you've been sheep hunting, you've been hunting wolves, you've hunted elk, deer, antelope, right? I mean, pretty much everything in the West and East Coast, and been all over the place. So give us a quick rundown about yourself.
Yeah, I'm an older gentleman, and I showed a picture. John's already got that. I killed my first deer along the Baraba River, Union Center, Wisconsin, in 1966 with a good friend of mine, Dick Rogers, and this will be our 51st year of hunting the same farm and killing the great-great-grandsons of the bucks that we killed then. And the funny thing, and I'd like to share this, quality deer management and management techniques work, folks. Why do they work? Because you adhere to them. Last year we killed the biggest buck, the oldest buck on the farm. Garrett got it. Garrett was one of the nephews of the owners. And it was a 180 monster, 5.5 years old. Just, you could weigh the horns, I mean, with the mass on it. And he killed it right off the junkyard between, you know, Myers and Lester's place. I'm telling all the, you'll never hunt it anyway, but yeah. he patterned in it. He got it the second day of the season, and he watched it all summer with trail cameras. And from his house, he could look down the hill. He didn't even have to leave his house to watch him feed. And and we're just excited that we have that quality deer. My best deer off the farm came 2 years ago, and I took a 135, and that's the best one that I've seen. Mm-hmm. And close enough to shoot that I took. Are there bigger bucks? And Garrett said, you know, Hutch, that's what they call me. That's what I've been known from college, high school, all that. But anyway, they said, "Hutch, you wouldn't believe the deer that we're seeing now," because we got trail cameras set up right. And the one key that I want to share with everybody, if you're hunting a property and getting the same age class and rolling over, change it up and maybe don't hunt the farm the next year. Let an eighth class mature, so you have some 5.5, 6.5 year old bucks that could be monsters, or they could be trash bucks because they're past their prime. But let them breed and grow your age class. If you do that, and it's taken us 10 years to do it, but we all know that there's a 200 buck inch buck on the farm.
Wow,
we all know that. Who's going to get it? We don't know. Will nobody get it? We don't know. But we know for certain there is a 200-inch buck because we get them on cameras. Plus, guys have seen them this winter. And just the age, it's the same deer. And it's just big and the size. I mean, he's a Brutus. That's his name. It's Brutus. But we know that. But how many years did it take? Because Eddie shot a 173 probably 20 years ago.
Wow.
And, you know, and that was the best one off the farm. But all of a sudden now we're seeing lots of bucks. Why? Because the only person or the only people that can shoot does, not does, but young bucks, are the kids who's never shot a buck. we do drives after Thanksgiving. And if it's brown, it's down. If it's legal, it's down. Because they need to learn how to hunt.
Right.
They need
exactly
to do all that. But everybody else, not so much. And we're seeing the results of it.
That's smart.
I mean, and people are trying to get on our land and they know they can't.
Right.
They know they can't. So the only challenge now, we just have predators and we have wolves. So
yeah,
that's an interesting, you know,
prediction. That's gonna be a tough thing to deal with for a while. hopefully some laws will start changing and things will be easier. But
yeah, so I grew up kind of where John grew up. I was born in Rhode Island, went to Massapequa High School in Long Island. And John and I, the other day, were talking about hunting whitetails on Long Island, which I never did. I shot a lot of ducks, caught a lot of stripers and blues, Jones Beach, and did all that. But I never deer hunted. And today they got a suburban deer problem, as we talked about, you know, John, before. But yeah. That's where I started off. Massapequa, went to University of Wisconsin, La Crosse on the Mississippi River. Duh, whitetails, geese, ducks. Yeah. We always ate. I was never a hungry college student.
Yeah, right.
That's for sure. So anyway, that's kind of the short and sweet of it.
Cool. Well, so I brought you on to talk about whitetail deer hunting today, because you obviously got extensive knowledge, been hunting them for longer than I've been alive. I keep getting questions about hunting with decoys, and you know, I've been through phases. I've used them before. I own like five different kinds of decoy, from the blow up to just a silhouette to, you know, half butts and whatnot, or even just a simple tail. I used to use a whitetail tail and set it up on a fishing wire and use that and flick that, you know, to get our attention and stuff. But over the years, I've kind of gotten simple, and like, I hate carrying stuff into the woods, and maybe it's laziness. I don't know, but I stopped doing it. So, but what's your take on using a decoy?
Well, I got two, thoughts about that. And we'll talk about the first part. The first part is 2004. I started decoying bucks, and Renzo, you got a picture of it. John will put it in the show notes, Renzo decoy. And it's a silhouette made out of plastic, and you take steel rods and put it up the bottom, right. and it's there. And I have a buck and I have a doe. And so the biggest thing, if you're going to use decoys, you have to know what's in your area, where the competition is. Because if there's not a lot of deer in the area, there's not a lot of bucks, especially young age class that are full of piss and vinegar, and they want to, you know, I'm going to come out and kick your ass type thing, or mature right. buck that says, I'm the dominant buck and you better not come on my turf. Right. Okay. You got to look at your age classes and figure out what you have, because if it's young bucks that you want to get in, do you want to shoot a young buck? That's up to you. I don't really care, but you have to look at what's on the ground, what's going to come through. And I'm not talking about the rut, because you can use during the seeking phase and chasing phase, you can use decoys very effectively. Also, in September, when the first starts out, you want to have a sense of security, because you know you got a buck pattern and you want to make sure he just kind of saunters right in, nothing's changed, and he sees a tail over here, he might see some horns over there. Oh, they're already feeding the alfalfa, the beans, or whatever, you know, food source they're feeding on. So all of a sudden, you have some security. And that security is within 20 or 30 yards of your blind. Do not put a decoy out 50, 60 yards. Don't do it yourself, because you just screwed yourself, in my opinion. And all this, whatever you hear today, ladies and gentlemen, it's my opinion. You might say I'm full of shit, and that's okay. I get that. No, I do, John. I mean,
honestly, I mean,
I get it.
It's all our opinions. Everybody that comes on the show, everybody comes on your show, it's just stuff that we learned, and we've, you know, what works for us may not work for another guy, so to speak. And that's why I think it's so important for everybody to get as much information as possible. That's why I'm always trying to learn, so I could take bits and pieces from everybody else and incorporate it into my style of hunting. So,
Right. So let's go back. Okay. So first thing, you know, have to know your census. Why? Young bucks and older bucks, mature bucks. And this will become when I get into the second phase of the lockdown. But let's talk about in September. Okay. Security. That's why I use a doe. Mm-hmm. Not so much a buck. A doe. She's out there feeding. She's the early bird. She's all that because I know the buck's sitting in transition zone. We know they're there. Okay. Let's go back to that factor. Do you know what's on your land? Public or private? Do you know? Because if you don't know, it's just like hunting for elk, hunting, I offshore fish. If the fish ain't there, I don't care what you're going to do, you're not going to kill them. If right. the elk aren't there, you're not going to kill them. Okay, whitetails can live in 40 acres.
Right.
And the smart ones, they disappear, they're ghosts. So somehow you have to figure out what's on my ground. And if they're not, you got to suck them off the landowner's ground. So that's number one. What do I have? What's my inventory? In that inventory, what's my age class? Then that'll determine the effectiveness or the not effectiveness of your decoys. Right. So let's September, security, everything's cool. They got patterns. The deer comes out. I'm a buck sitting in a transition zone on a ridge overlooking that. I can sight check the field, making sure everything's good, and then I saunter out. Maybe because he sees Mrs. Doe, he comes out a little bit early, maybe. Mm-hmm. Okay, so September goes, then October gets kind of funky. Then all of a sudden, you see a little rub line, or you see a football-sized scrape, or you see something happening in the woods because they're changing their feeding patterns, but the testosterone's starting to happen. Mm-hmm. The teenagers are starting to go, whoa. What's yep. this all about? You know, and so they're kind of feeling their oats and they're banging heads and they're just becoming, you know, becoming men, becoming teenagers. Right. And the does know what's happening too, because they're kind of shying away because they've been through this drill before. So now we're in late September, early October-ish, and all of a sudden we start seeing stuff on our trail cameras. And now we want to look at, okay, when can I start attracting these bucks? So I put a buck out there by himself and I do soft rattling. I'm tick rattling. And maybe, you know, every once in a while, everything's really soft. Because right. if you hunt elk, if you sound like the baddest elk in the world, you might not get that other bull in because he's already had his butt kicked last year.
Right.
He's not going to fight you. So just everything's soft at this point in time. In that early October, it's just soft, and you know, you're seeing some rub lines, and like I said, the scrapes. And I don't use scent in the scrape until the rut's on. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the does are coming to estrus because it doesn't work; it's unnatural. And so, don't overdo anything at this time of year. Then all of a sudden, we're mature and we're getting into mid-October. We're before Halloween, and you know, we're starting to see. We're starting to see maybe. Bucks during the daytime, maybe a little bit. Trail camera shots and all that. So now the rub lines are getting a little more defined and you're seeing mm-hmm. some scrapes defining home ranges and core areas and all that. And I'm going to throw a lot of stuff out, guys, but you know, need to study the game and you need to understand that when you're hunting a whitetail, you just walked into his front door and he knows every sink where everything on spoon, saucer, and glasses
right
in his house. And you yep. go, what are you talking about? Don't move. Do not move his coffee table.
Right.
Do not put his cup on the left side rather than the right side. And John, you understand this, your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I mean, it's uncanny their spatial awareness and how, you know, that's why like, ground blinds and all that stuff. It's very important to put that stuff out really early because it's going to disturb the area. So you have to, even if you brush it in, you have to get them accustomed to it and that it becomes just another fixture in his living room, so to speak. And you know, the lower the impact that you have, the greater chances you have of scoring the buck that you're, especially if it's, you're targeting a specific buck for sure.
Yeah. So. And folks, you need, you know, I'm throwing a lot of stuff. Okay. So once the seeking phase starts, and even before that, you want to have your hit list whatever that means to you. And again, the trophy is in the eyes of the beholder, so we'll just leave that go. But you have to have a hit list. If you're not specific enough to have a hit list and just wondering, you're sitting in the woods and you're going to shoot anything that comes by, you're really killing yourself because you're not hunting deer. You're going to Vegas, you're going to Atlantic City, throwing the dice out, whatever happens, happens. And that's fine. If that's like you want to hunt, but the guys, John and I talk on this, on our shows about, I mean, they're 365 deer hunters and they're hunting 365 days a year. And if you can't do that, don't want to do that, that's okay. But the odds of you shooting mature buck 4.5 years or older, forget about points, forget about scores, but a mature deer, then you have to study that sucker harder than you ever studied in high school or college. Cause I get my ass kicked all the time.
Right.
I do. And a sidebar, which you just said, I'm going up to the farm and I've always wanted to put in a ground blind in this one place. It's really a bitch to get to. And it's it's a one and done. Either you got to sneak in and either get the buck that day because he's going to know you're there. It's really close. And so June 25th, I'm going to cut in my ground blind and I'm going to brush it in. I'm going to, you know, have it as visible as possible. And I'm only going to sit in that blind once the whole year. Everything has to be perfect. And I'm getting it down to, you know, the 24 hours where I think that buck's going to be there. Now, how do they do that, folks? Well, I've been hunting the same farm for 51 years. I know that buck's there. And, you know, and if I do it right, well, Brutus might die.
Jeez.
But what a motivator.
That'd be something else though, right? I mean, what satisfaction you would have out of taking an animal like that, but having that much invested into it that you know that you're going to hunt it this day, this time, this way to get, I mean, there's nothing like that. That's like taking a trophy that's 200 inches and making it a 300 inch trophy because it's just
forget the inches. It's just, I got one shot at them.
Right.
Yeah. The way I got it figured, you know, and we got competition, you know, cause a lot of people on 1,000-acre farm, but there's probably half of it, 3/4 of it is ag land.
Right.
So we kind of know where the deer are going to be. We kind of know where he lives and where, how he runs. And so I'm going to, you know, I picked my spot and we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So just to go back to the question that we started with, we kind of hit on a lot of things. So obviously you believe in decoys. It's just, you have to use them very specific times. It's knowing the behavior of the deer, when to use a doe, when to use a buck. And so just so we can give them some tangible information, cause right now what we gave them is more questions because we're giving them a lot of information. Let's try to, give me a rule of thumb for early season, rule of thumb for chasing, and seeking phase. And then, you know, one for the rut,
early season doe on the food source, face the way they're going to come in. I use silhouettes. I don't use flambeaux and blow ups. They're just too much to carry. Yeah. Okay. The only flambeau we have stays in the box stand. And so we slip in, put that out and it never leaves. It goes in there at the beginning of the season, never leaves. And we just change the places that we have. So early on, silhouette, no scent. And you have to figure out, okay, where's their entry point? Because when that buck is in a transition zone, 100 yards, 200 yards off the field, he's going to sight check that. So I want the doe's silhouette to show.
Right.
Okay. So that's then. Now, again, depending on the census, do I put a buck out by himself early on in the chasing phase? Yes. Because it's that time. And this buck is just on the thing. He's just looking. And I kick his head and do that stuff. So he's just looking. He's there. He's kind of right on the fringe and he's looking. So if another buck's coming down the fence row or over the ridge, how are you going to set up? They're going to see him go, okay, am I going to go check him out, or what am I going to do? Curiosity. So wind direction, how they're going to enter the field, exit the field, or if I'm on a ridge,
right?
I'm trying, because I don't want to give, I can't give too much information because I'll confuse the heck out of people. I don't want to do it. So let's say on a field, and because on a ridge, if he's into the oaks, it's a different setup. If he's eating mast, you know, it's just a different setup.
Right.
Okay. So let's say on a field. So then the young buck's out there and he's just hanging out. I'm not doing any tickling of my antlers. He's just there and I'm quiet. I'm a ghost in my tree stand. Now chasing phase starts up. So now I've got a buck and I'm rattling and I'm grunting and I might go, I might do a snort wheeze because now the doe might be right near me. I mean, near me like 10 yards, 15 yards. And the buck is away from me, 20, 25 yards, 30 yards. Mm-hmm. So they're not even close. They're just, the buck's checking her out. She's kind of edging away and go, it's not the time yet. So we get juveniles swinging through. But if you do a little rattling and the doe's there, she's not, no scent. And all of a sudden there's a scrape that just got set up 2 days ago. So you got that buck kind of near that, like he's going to kind of sniff it and check it out. Then you might draw in a mature deer.
Right.
Or a deer that's kind of into the dominant buck in the area. He might be checking out, said, you're out of here.
Right.
Or not.
Yeah. So perhaps they could do whatever they want to do.
Seeking phase changes. Why? Because now the buck, we got scent in the scrape. We got the doe kind of edging away from the buck, but the buck's right on her butt.
Right.
Okay. Now I'm a mature buck and I'm going, oh, there's a doe. Get a little whip. Boom. He's going to come in. And that's when it's really fun, folks, because they'll blow up your decoys.
Yeah.
Literally. And everybody's seeing it. Just go to YouTube and they'll blow up your decoys. So this is a seeking phase and they want it. And I'm the tough guy. And so weather, wind, and how well you have your scent control all determines if that decoy is going to be successful or not in that thing. So that's before the lockdown. Any question you want me to fill in? Just ask me a question, John.
You know, I honestly, this subject has got so much detail. We could probably fill up a whole hour. You talking some real specifics about it. I think what I want to do is I have two other questions that are at least one other question. You just started mentioning it, the mock scrape or scrape. And I want to get into, cause it's a question that gets asked of me a lot and I've dabbled a lot with it myself and I have my own theories about it and how and when to use it, but I'd like to hear your take on it. So yeah, I mean, if we want to continue on a little bit more about the decoy and then I want to roll into the into the mock scrape.
I'm going to give a plug for Garrick Rowe. He's out of Hayes, Kansas, Heads Up Decoy. Had him on the show a couple of years ago, and then I just had him on the show again. And I said, okay, tell me exactly what you do. So listen up. I'm not going to go down rabbit trails. Okay. Heads Up Decoy. You can go on the web and find it. What he does during the lockdown, when all the bucks disappear, why? Because they're locked down. They're going to breed that doe. Nobody's going to come near him. Key point. Nobody's going to disrupt him. Key point. He's got her, and he might be in 5 yards of just crap. Nobody can see him. The only thing you can see from long distance scouting is like honey moose up in Alaska. You see the palms, his horns just flick.
Right.
Or you might see an ear. Or you see the glint off the horns. That's all you see. Because you're glassing him from maybe a quarter mile away. And guys, you can do that. There's glass out there. You can see his eyeballs and his eyelashes from a quarter mile away.
Yeah.
The glass is that good. So he goes high points. He's hunting Kansas. Kansas is flat, but he finds the highest elevation. And he sits there midday from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock is his prime time. When does he find these places, these tiny yucca plants, these tiny brush piles, these tiny just small areas. Why do the bucks go to these small areas where they're dope? One, they lock them down and they can see 360. You're not going to come in there. Important point. So let's go back. Long distance scouting, you got to learn how to do it. You do it between 10 and 2. Mm-hmm. That's when you do it. Okay, so you're out there glassing. You see a glint. You see an ear flicker. That's all you need. Now he does two things. He backs away. He doesn't go right to him. He plays to win. He already sort of kind of knows where these honey holes are, where these lockdown spots are. So mm-hmm. he knows how to get in there with not disrupting, not busting anything else. Remember, it's the middle of the day. So then he gets all set up and he's bow hunting. And so he has his heads up decoy. Check the website. Garrett Rowe, heads up decoy. So he gets that. And what he's going to do is piss this buck off. He's just going to get right in his face and he's going to take his best girl. Okay, guys, what happens? You know what happens? Nobody takes your best girl. Nobody takes the lady that you're thinking of romancing her that evening. Not going to happen. And that's the whole secret. He's got every yeah. – and you got to go to his website, read his blogs, listen to his show, Garrett Rowe on Whitetail Rendezvous. Just Google him, and he'll walk you through the whole thing. So he gets there. He gets set up. He gets within 60 yards-ish. You know, so if things happen real fast, he's got a shot. So whatever right. your comfort zone is, that's where you start up. Do not start at 50 yards because you're going to lose because you can't shoot them to 30.
Right.
It's going to be really tough on you. So figure out your lethal zone, your firing zone, and figure out where your target's going to come from. That's the other thing. If he comes head on, what kind of shot you have? Because he's all bristled up. He's all muscle. I mean, it might be tough. So you have to be at that 45-degree angle or whatever that you want because you want to get hot lungs, you know, from the back to the front. That's right. One different thing. But you have to do your target acquisition and figure out your firing solution for your military guys. You know what I'm talking about. So you do that. He gets 56 yards thing.
Starts challenging.
He starts challenging him, you know, and he said it's unbelievable because he'll see the head come up and he'll see the bristle up. He won't come up. He won't get on his feet, but he's starting to look. He sees noses. I mean, and they're a nothing. I mean, you think a pheasant can hide in nothing. You're right. Talking about a 200-pound buck, 180-pound buck, you know, that's mature, and you can't see him. And he's right. only 50 yards away. He says it's a riot. And so then he just starts inching, literally inching closer.
Right.
He does whatever he can, and then the buck's going to get pissed, and then he's going to hit that mark, whatever that mark is, that line that you better not cross that because I'm coming out, and it's over. It's game on. That's what he does. He comes right up and pressures him so bad because, one, he's not going to leave that lady.
Right.
That's his future. That's passing on the gene. He's got to protect that. He knows within an hour, 2 hours, it doesn't matter. He's going to breed her. And that's what he's all about. But now this other guy's coming in, and he's got his heads-up decoy, and it's got shoulders, got the rack and everything. So this isn't a wimp kid. This is somebody that – you know, might kick his butt.
Right.
So then it's game on.
Yep.
It's just
That's
game
cool.
on.
I played around a little bit with a mule deer decoy here. I've mainly used a doe. I didn't use a buck. I used a mule deer doe decoy, and I used it during the rut. And it definitely created some opportunities for me. I'd definitely like to try that out with whitetail, though. That sounds like – it sounds like something that I could probably do with coos deer, because they're notorious. They're notorious for taking their doe and like stuffing them in a little hole, you know, during that lockdown period. And I think that would I think that'd be badass. I'm gonna try that out this year.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it too.
Yeah,
you know, and, you know, I'm going to hunt Pepin County. I'm not hunting Buffalo County this year, but I'm hunting Pepin County just north of that. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of ridges and then ridges and cropland with creek bottoms. And so I'm going to long distance scout and I'm going to set up an observation stand on my buddy's farm, and I'm just going to watch. Yeah, I'll have my I hunt with a crossbow because my shoulder's pinned, but I'm just going to watch and figure it out. We got trail cameras up, and we had he had a 180 pig that we never got last year. He never got. Jimmy Davis is his name. He's been on the show, so you can check him out. But having said all that, long distance scouting during the lockdown is just, that's the way you do it. I don't care what state you're in. Observation stand, find them between 10 and 2, go after them with a heads up decoy.
Cool. All right. So I guess, we know you use scrapes, or at least you hunt scrapes. So how do you feel about mock scrapes? What's your take on
them? I didn't know anything about mock scrapes, really. I've read about them. And again, I like to keep my life simple. The older I get and the more I hunt, the simpler it is and the more stealthy. Okay. You don't want to disrupt anything. And I'm getting manacle about this, or over analytical,
right?
Because the less that deer knows I'm there, that's why with Brutus I got one shot, because I know right. It's a one and done. And you have to think that way, folks. You got one shot. It isn't walking into your stand and putting some scent out and hoping the wind pulls them in and you get lucky. Forget that. I'm very serious. You guys, forget that. If you want to kill mature bucks consistently, okay, I've killed a lot of deer. Have I killed mature buck consistently? No. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but I just haven't. You know, I've got some nice trophies, and, you know, I have very representative trophies, and I've been happy with that. But the more I've been on the show the last 2 years, I go, you're better than that. Mm-hmm. And you can figure it out, because the big bucks are, I don't care where you are in the United States, if you hear my voice and there are whitetail in your state, there are bigger bucks than you ever dreamed of. Forget about reading or watching the videos, the Pursuit Channel. Those bucks are probably within a quarter of a mile of your stand. There's at least one of them.
Yeah.
And you can call me wrong, you know, call me right, call me wrong, but that's how smart they are in getting back to them. So, okay, mock scrapes, you want to figure out your setup off Google Earth. And you've got all my notes, and I don't know what you want to do with that. But Jerry Everhart with Hunt Fish Journal about 18 months ago, you know, told me about creating a box. And I want to talk about this. So, on Google Earth, you figure out where your stands are, and you have to go, you take a line, you go due north, due south, east and west, and you overlay that on your stand. Okay. Mm-hmm. You just put the where they cross right where your stand is today. Then you do this in the wintertime, and then you take that, and you know your woods really well. So you know sort of kind of where the trails are. You know,
right.
Annual trails. So you got north, south, east, and west, and now you create a box. How do you create a box? Because bucks go at 45 degrees angles. They don't go north and south. They don't go east and west. They go up 45 degrees,
right?
In my opinion. So they're coming across. So if you go from east to north, they're not following a straight path like an interstate. They're going at 45. Okay, they're the hypotenuse of the right angle triangle. Okay, and so you have just take a piece of paper at the top is north, bottom, and draw the cross, and your stand's in the middle. Now we're going to put 45 degree trails that intersect both the north and the east, and that becomes the hypotenuse. So your stand's here, and between north and east along that trail, wherever you can get the right shot without cutting out huge shooting lanes. If you're going to cut shooting lanes, cut them out in the wintertime if they're big. In the summertime, just trim carefully. Why? Because the deer knows you're there. If you do a lot, they know that you're there. So anyway, so now you've got 4 points. You've got north and east, north and west, west and south, northeast, northwest, southwest and southeast. Okay. And there's a place that you're going to put a scrape there. And mm-hmm. if you put them all together, there's 360 around your stand and it creates a box. So you're in the middle of the box. And your scrapes, depending on your firing solutions and your target acquisition, okay, you put your scrapes where you can shoot. Do not put a scrape where you can't shoot that deer.
Right.
Just don't do it. Thinking he'll come off the scrape and buy you. You want to be where he's either coming into the scrape or leaving the scrape or right on the scrape. And mm-hmm. it should be 20 yards or less, because you just want to smoke him.
Right.
And you might say, well, I can shoot 100 yards. Good for you. You're not going to do that. You'll never get that buck unless he's in Kansas and outside in the woods. Good luck.
Yeah.
And show me the pictures.
I don't know. I beg to differ. I try to stay a little bit further away. I typically try to keep them 30 to 40 yards, just like, but going back to what you said, low impact. But I mean, I need to make sure that I can, you know, I got clear lanes to it, of course. You know, I picked the right tree for it. I rely heavily on my ability to shoot, because even when I'm spot and stalking, I rely heavily on my ability to shoot because I'm not as sneaky as I'd like to be. So I make up for it for being a crack shot. So, but.
And I'm an old guy, and so I've just learned my odds go up tremendously, you know, when they're inside 30 yards, even with my crossbow. And I can
– For sure.
I can shoot 60 yards all day long, and the deer's going to die all the time. But, you know, this is how I do it. And so you have the 4 points, and then you have a box, because during the rut or during this point in time mm-hmm. when they're seeking and checking scrapes any time of day, you don't know what – side they're coming in on. And if you have your scent control, your stand's high enough, and there's a lot of factors in that, we're not going to get into that whole thing, but if you snuck into your stand, nobody knows you're there, low impact, and you're going to do an all-day sit. And the thing I found out, you've got 3 sits or 12 hours. I don't care how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
3 sits or 12 hours. So 3 times 4 is 12 hours. So you got four 3-hour sits or 4 3-hour sits or 1 all-day sit. That's going back to Brutus. So I know I'm going to be in there 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm going to leave there, you know, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock at night, dark 30. And that's my one shot. I'm going to burn those whole 12 hours in there. Why? Any longer than that, you're fidgeting too much. You drop the candy wrapper. You got to go pee. You got to go poo, you got to do something, you're moving, and the deer, they're a quarter mile away looking at you because you're like, I hunt along the Medina Creek on Buffalo River, and he's sitting up on the ridge looking right down at me. I'm in the swamp and a perfect funnel, the yada yada yada, and he's laughing his ass off,
right?
Because he saw me move, he saw me stretch. That's how anal it gets. So mock scrapes, 4 of them. Crystals, I use Nelson Creek, Brian Sparks crystals, put them in there. Why? Because every time a deer steps on them, it poofs. It gives them new, fresh scent. And you have to use fresh scent. If mm-hmm. your scent, when you open up, smells like ammonia, throw it away. Yeah. If it's dark, if it's black, throw it away. When you pee, the best pee you can do is clear pee because you're hydrated. Okay, the darker your pee gets, the more enzymes and all the other stuff. Deer know that, folks. They have when they do lip curls and all that, I'm not getting the scientific stuff, but they can filter. They can tell when that doe's an estrus. Why? Right. Because they have receptors in their nose. That's just what they do. And so they can smell that pee or whatever scent you're putting out. They know, is that real? Is that fake? Is that synthetic? Is that fresh? Is it not? Is that came out of Kmart, or did it come out of, you know, a deer farm that was just harvested 24 hours ago?
Right.
They know that.
Right. No, they're – yeah, my take on the mock scrape is I only use it like – it's a generalization. I'm going to say pre-rut, because we all know there's definitely different phases, but it's right when the Bucks are starting to kind of get up and really start cruising around, just before that like true seeking phase. It's about the only time I've ever used mock scrapes and really had any serious results with them. I do hunt over scrape lines and rub lines that are natural. And my main thing for those is I watch the weather. So if I have a stand that's on a scrape line, I wait till I get a rain. If it rains at nighttime, I know first thing in the morning that buck is coming to refresh that. If it rains in the morning and it stops that afternoon, he's going to come out and he's going to refresh that scrape. And that's how I killed Swamp Donkey actually this past year, one of my biggest bucks I've ever shot in Long Island. And, it's keeping an eye on those things. It's like, that's pretty much about the only time that I put a lot of weight into a scrape or a rub line. Other than that, it's always good to see that stuff because then, there's bucks in the area, but, it's not something that I hinge my whole hunting on. I don't, oh my God, there's a scrape right here. I got to hang a tree stand, and it's finding the right scrapes too, because, field edge scrapes, those aren't the ones that they're really using to communicate what they're trying to communicate. I mean, yes, they are, but they're not really. It's those community scrapes that the does actually hit, the ones that they've been hitting for years and years. Like you could see, like, if there's exposed roots, you could see scarring on roots and stuff like that from years of being pawed and healing back up. Those are the kind of scrapes that I look for, and that are in conjunction with really good travel corridors and really good, pathways and stuff like that. But as far as going out there and just setting up my own scrape and hoping that I'm going to kill something off of it, I don't put a lot of weight into it. Like I said, it's got to have a real specific time. And, honestly, it's kind of, I use it when I feel a little desperate and I need to mix it up or something, I think. But,
scrapes will tell you everything about your age class of bucks in your land. And mm-hmm. I love what you said, community scrapes, because they can be as big as your living room. I mean, I've seen huge community scrapes, and you go, that must be some feral hogs rooting. No, the community scrapes. And just like you said, there's some scrapes that are there year after year after year mm-hmm. after year. But I don't sit on those community scrapes. I sit where I can slip in, slip out. Right. They'll never know I'm there with the right wind conditions. That's the other thing. On all the things we're talking about is that it has to be right. You just said, if it rains, it snows, they're going to come back and refresh it. Why? Because they want to smell that those pee right. because – they'll know how close she is to estrus. I mean, that's why right. they're cruising. They're looking for that one doe, and then they're going to find her. Right. And then they're going to chase off the other bucks. So, folks, that's why you need to be a 365-day hunter. You'll sit with John, and we could throw another couple guys or gals in the room, and we could talk as long as we want to talk. And John will say, edge scrapes are great. They're signposts because they come out, and they're kind of licking branch and all that. They're important, but you want to be where the bucks are secure and they feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then you work those scrapes, not the exposed scrapes, not the scrape. If it's easy to find, forget it.
Right.
That's my two cents on that.
I'm actually going to share my screen with you here, and I'm going to show you and the listeners an example. Hopefully I'll be able to do this correctly here. Let's see. Can you see my Google Earth?
Nope.
Huh? What did I do wrong? There we go. I didn't hit it. That's why. All right. So
here we go.
This is a stand site of mine. that I used to hunt. I used to lease some land in Illinois. So as you can see, there's like a peninsula. This is my peninsula. It's called the peninsula stand of trees, a little finger of trees that juts out here. And what this creates and what I'm going to get at here before, there's a scrape, there's a community scrape, just inside, and you obviously you can't see because of the tree canopy, but, probably 20 yards from that stand. And it's been there and it's a travel corridor. And these bucks, they'll come in here and they'll stage up. This is a staging area before they come out into these fields to eat. The other thing about it is it's not just a travel corridor to come out into the field. They're going to cross. See, there's a creek right here, or it's a little more than a creek actually, but it's a pretty good waterway. And there's another, see how there's a S curve right here? Can you see my pointer or no?
Yep.
Okay. So there's a little S curve going on right here, or definitely a sharp turn. So there's always, after a sharp turn, there's always, almost always a crossing point. And this crossing point happens to be perfect to where this swale is right here. So the deer will cross from this side, cross the river, and they'll walk in this swale and come into this peninsula to get back into this bedding cover. And it's combining all these things along with the scrape. There's also a rub line through here too, that this kind of, it's kind of like a little bit of a ridge, a little bit of ridge, and then it actually drops down. It drops down in here, drops down, but up here it's kind of like a ridge, and there's a rub line that goes down this ridge until it drops down to this bottom where they go and they, you know, they bed for the day. So it's combining all these things and putting all the pieces of the puzzle together that make this a very effective stand. And the other thing that makes it an effective stand is that I can access this by crossing the field, which is very low impact, at times that I know that deer are not going to be in the field. It's going back and touching a lot of things that you said, earlier, that, you know, about picking the right, really far away,
quarter mile away, I bet.
Or a quarter mile away. That's about a half a mile. Actually. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I only hunt that stand very specific times. I honestly don't hunt it in the morning very much because the deer are in the fields in the morning. You know, when I'm trying to get there, slip in their first light, there's deer in the field. So it's an afternoon spot for me, and it's definitely catching them on their way out to feeding and so on and so forth. But depending on the weather, if I get a lot of rain at nighttime, I might hit that stand in the early part of the day. It's always putting the, I think with whitetail hunting more than any other type of hunting, because I mean, I love hunting mule deer. I love hunting elk. I love hunting out west. I've been a western game hunter for longer than I've been I've been a whitetail hunter, because I started whitetail hunting first. But I've been hunting out here in the west for 26 years, and that's more than half my life. But more than anything, whitetail, it's like a puzzle. It's a chess game. It's different. It's like, it's like you do this move and he's going to do this move. And it's always thinking, trying to think ahead, where I think, you know, your traditional spot and stalk and stuff that you do out west and calling for elk and stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of strategies and a lot of, you know, implementation of tactics, but it's not as much of a mind game. It's actually more of a physical game, I think, than anything. It's more about trying to be sneaky and stealthy and, you know, playing terrain and playing wind, where this is more like figuring out behavior and getting into the mind of your enemy, so to speak, you know, so you can win that war. That's why it's always fascinated me. It's always been a passion of mine, because of the mind game, because of it. It's like a chess match, I think is the best way to describe it.
There's no question about it. You know, and folks, if you're not using Google Earth, this, you just saw a perfect example why you need Google Earth, because you can step back, you can see how everything lays, and you can pick out pretty much everything. Once you've done it enough, you said, okay, here, where's the optimum? Where's my one best place that I need to be? When do I need to be there? What time of day? What wind condition? All those factor in, and you'll load that on the peninsula stand. So you on your computer, peninsula stand, it's going to hit these criteria, then you hunt it. If it doesn't hit one right. of the five criteria, you don't hunt it. And so, you know, this is, you're getting a PhD from John today, and you know, about how anal you have to be to figure out and kill mature buck. Yes, I've shot a lot of deer, but I haven't killed mature buck simply because of the reason we're seeing here. I just went out and I worked my ass off and I got in the right place, and Mr. Wonderful came by and I dumped him. I shot him. Right. I killed him. I harvested him and I ate him.
Right.
Okay. But how many times did that happen, as opposed to that same buck and his brothers, cousins, uncles? I'm hunting, you know, some grandkids now of bucks I never saw, and they were less than a quarter mile from me. They were less than 200 yards from me. Mm-hmm. I know that now, but I screwed up. And that's what I said. I can almost guarantee you on any 20 acres, 40 acres, suburban hunting might be, you know, 5 acres. In other plots, it might be bigger. There's a buck of your dreams that close, and you may never see him if you don't do some of the stuff right. John, your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we talked about Long Island. I hunt in 5 acre lots. I hunt in 10 acre lots, you know, and my taxidermist over there in New York, matter of fact, there's a lot of, you know what, I'm not going to give this away, but there's a lot of little spots that are public land. And, he just shot a 214 on Long Island. A 214-inch buck.
And 100 by 100 square yards, probably.
If that. I want to say I know where – I know the type of land that he's hunting that's – it's deemed public, but nobody would ever think to go hunting there. It's literally like 2 acres.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And – yeah, that buck is not there all day long, every day at the same, but it's something that he uses, and it's about picking the right time and being in the right place. And that's how you kill deer like that. I honestly, if I had land that I can hunt, you know, if I had a farm or something like that, I feel like, and really more is time. See, my seasons, I live my seasons five to 7 days at a time, because I travel to go hunt, so I don't ever have the time to go pre-scout. My tactics, my claim to fame even, is the fact that I've go to a spot, figure it out in a short amount of time, and I make something happen. But I feel like if I can put that crazy, you know, scientist mentality that you were talking about the whole podcast of how serious you have to be and be 360. If I was able to do that, I feel like I'd be killing 200-inch bucks every year, because I know that if I could put that kind of time on it. Well, of course you got to have a place that holds that kind of deer too, but you know, I just don't have that. I just don't have that ability, and I don't have the means. I don't have the land or whatever. I hunt all public land, and I do well for myself, but I feel like I could do so much better if I stopped doing, you know, 13, 14 hunts a year, and I narrowed it down to maybe 2 or 3 and just spent a lot more time on those one hunts, because you're right. You know, like you were saying, you only got 10 days to hunt, and that stands only good hunt one day, because the conditions are right. It's really tough to be successful.
But that's what it takes, John. And you know, you summarize, I don't know how we're doing on our time, but you summarize a lot what you said, because I'm trying to give people information, and hey, you know, whitetailrendezvous@gmail.com. I'll talk to anybody, you know, just email me. I can't talk on the phone all the time. You know, when somebody said, you know, guys like you and I, and there's a lot of guys out there, Mark Kenyon and Jay Scott from Big Buck Registry, your friend Jay Scott Outdoors. I mean, there's people, folks that have beyond PhDs. Mm-hmm. I'm working on my PhD now, but some of the guys out there, and some of the people I know, and I won't say his name. He has a barn that he has 125s at eye level, and he goes all the way up to at the top. It's 200-inch deer, all DIY, all archery, all on public land. And that's the side of a barn. So you enter the barn, and he's been at it 40 years, and he's hell of a, you know, he's going to Africa, blah, 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 and done all that stuff, archery. But he does it all DIY. He hunts because of his work and stuff. He hunts 45 days. Mm-hmm. He hunts numerous places, and he picks them out, and he finds these little places, and he long distance scouts and watches, sets the stand, hunts it 1, 2, or 3 days max. If he doesn't get it, he's out of there.
Yep.
And the proof is in the pudding. Yeah. I mean, you'd love him, John. You'd love him. And he, I never can say his name because he loves hunting so much he doesn't want to share it. He's so, and take me a long time to become his friend. We met in Buffalo County hunting, and he said, "You're a guy like you." But, you know, and he would love you too, because you think about what you're doing. It isn't just going out and killing an animal. We're playing the chess match. We're trying to figure them out. And the better we do that, and the more you listen to people like John, or if you, you know, other people, the better hunter you're going to be. Because take this serious. Everybody dreams about a 200. I'd love to kill a 200. I've been in Saskatchewan, and I've seen a 200. I've been in Buffalo County and seen a 200. And he was where I was. I rattled him in, and I had all his subling that morning underneath me. And he came about 100 yards. There was a downfall. A big oak had fallen over. I saw his head. I went, "Oh shit!" Because he was there. That was my one shot, and he just he screwed me. And my buddy, who was, you know, a quarter mile away, said, "You just missed him, didn't you?" I said, "No, he never came close. It wasn't even close. I saw him. I saw the rack. I saw his body, and went, shit." And I had been hunting him for like 10 days or in the area, you know, trying to figure it out. And he was there. And I saw him during gun season, and he busted out of the valley he was in, took his does. He'd run with some does. And I went, "Oh, he wasn't 100 yards from me." And he was a Christmas tree.
Wow. I don't think I've ever seen a 200 whitetail on the hoof. 180s, 190s, but never the 200 mark. Mule deer, yes. Mule deer I have, definitely. You know, I've seen 200-inch mule deer. I've seen 400-inch bulls, but never a whitetail that big. I missed a 185 in Illinois about 15 years ago. It was a chip shot too. Like, I was like beside myself. I was like, "How the hell did I just miss this deer?" It was at like 9 yards. Well, I know how.
Oh,
I missed
no.
Them. Yeah. So back in the day, my top pin, I used to keep my top pin at 30 yards. Because, yeah, I hunted whitetail, but I lived out here. You know, I lived in Arizona, and I never get shots less than 30 yards, ever. You know, unless I'm sitting water in a ground blind or something, but never get shots less than 30 yards. So that there was no point. And back then, too, I was kind of an anomaly. There wasn't a lot of guys shooting, you know, 80 yards, 90 yards, you know, at the time. And I, you know, I was pinned from 30 to 90 yards because I knew those were the shots that I encountered out here. Again, because I'm not super sneaky. So, you know, I just he came in at 9 yards. You got a 30-yard pin. I should have just shot down the shaft of my arrow, but I decided to hold the pin low And at 9 yards, it didn't like, it didn't, I didn't register that I should have used my 50 yard pin or something else, you know, like a 40 yard pin probably, or something would have been better. But I gave him a haircut, and it was just heartbreaking. I had to leave to come back home like the very next day. So I never ended up getting another opportunity. The very next morning I shot a 135. And then I had to catch a plane that afternoon. So, yeah, but I got it on film so I could remind myself of how retarded I am.
So folks, John's being humble here, but stuff happens.
Yeah.
It does to us all. And, you know, you can play the tapes back and you go, oh, why did I do that? Because that's how hard hunting is. When you start getting really down to it, to close the deal, and you see on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, you see all these grips and grins and stuff. But somebody told me the statistics of taking even a 125, a Poupignon buck. It's just astronomical.
Just look at the bow hunting statistics, period. I think countrywide, we're at like 20% or something, 22%. Oh, it's actually gone up in the last few years. Maybe it's like 25, but
yeah,
I mean, it used to be sub 20, you know?
And so what we do, especially, you know, sticking a string is hard. And even, you know, I'll just throw this out. Even with the crossbow, it doesn't matter. You still have to do it right. Yeah. It's a little, I can shoot it sort of kind of like, well, like my rifle, I shoot an Excalibur. It's a recurve bow on a rail with a trigger. Okay. Right. If you shoot a Matthews, you're shooting, okay, mine's horizontal, yours is vertical, and you have a trigger. You got a release, and you got pins. I got pins or a scope. And so we're just changing it over. So you have to be a hunter to kill a buck with a crossbow or
a compound,
you know, stick in a string or a compound.
Yeah.
In traditional, it's even harder.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. And I've been dabbling in traditional for my whole life. I actually started with traditional bows back when I first started hunting. But I never got really crazy into it. As soon as I picked up a compound bow, I was like, there's too much to go wrong. And you know, like I was saying earlier, you know, I my seasons are 5-7 days. So I feel like I got to kind of stack the odds in my favor. I did this year force myself to use longbow. I drew a rifle javelina tag and I took the longbow. Me and my buddy Shane and Willie Schmidt from Pure Hunting. And we went, you know, javelina hunting, and I harvested one with my longbow. And that was honestly, I mean, when I shot that, it felt like I shot a, you know, like a 180 inch deer, you know. It was like a really, it's deeply gratifying when you shoot them with the real true stick and string, I think. So my hat's off to those guys that are, you know, all trad, especially the really trad guys that are using, you know, wood arrows and self bows and, you know, the true stick and string. So,
well, they're napping their own head. They're napping their own flint. I mean, I know a guy takes the antler. I watch him do it, and he naps them, and they get as sharp as you want to be sharp. I mean, they're just, you know, they're deadly.
Yeah.
But you have to know how to shoot traditional. And I'm going to give a shout out. Jim Williams was on the show. Anstein interviewed him as my co-host yesterday. Jim Williams is the president of Pope and Young, and he's hunted around the globe with a stick and a string around the globe, and he has set up as many trophies as you want to count in the Pope and Young book. That's for
sure. That was loud. Well, that's all I got for you. I'm sure we could sit here and BS about whitetail for the rest of the day, but we'll save some questions for another time that we have you on. It was a pleasure having you. It was always good talking to you. Where can our listeners find out about your podcast and more about you?
Just go to whitetailrendezvous.com. I'm on iTunes and I'm on Stitcher. I'm on Google Play. You can't go anyplace. Just Google me and you'll find out where Whitetail, there's a new one I just got on FM podcast, you know, so we're all over the map. But the biggest thing is social media. I respond to people. You know, my show is about real people in real places, and that's how we are. So any question you have, whitetailrendezvous@gmail.com, whitetailrendezvous.com. You can get a hold of me, and I will respond to you because, you know, we're all the same. Around the campfire, it's all common ground.
Yep, absolutely. Well, it was awesome having you on. Thank you very much for taking your time out of the day. And like I said, look forward to having you on again.
Thank you, John. It's been a blast.
Absolutely. Well, folks, thanks again for joining us. And you know the drill. We'd like to hear from you. Give us reviews and comments. Send us in your questions, stuff that you want to get answered, and I'll find that master in the industry to help us answer those questions and help me keep this podcast free by giving us reviews on iTunes. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next time.